pick a window.
Oh, wow. I don't know about the costume, but that's some set of wheels.
Hi, I'm Marv Wolfman, and you're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
You're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast. I'm your host, the Radioactive Professor of all things comic book, J.C. Carter. Joining me today on the show, my super friends, in the North, our punk pixie, Miss Jocelyn Christensen.
Hi, guys.
Stepping out of the shadows, our gamer goth, Ms. Patricia Altman.
I made it.
And on the bridge to his own private enterprise, our very own Admiral James Tiberius Batman Laird Jeff Bell.
I'm not enjoying my transition into being a sporting fan.
Oh no, why not?
Well, because now I arbitrarily I pick teams for dumb reasons.
Right.
It's like the Seattle Kraken is my favorite hockey team because they have the coolest fucking logo.
Right.
And so
as I discovered
that Peacock has premier games, Premier League soccer games.
Right.
And if you're already paying for Star Trek, you know, or whatever, if you're already paying for Peacock, you have access. So
yeah,
I'm
Peacock,
like, great.
Is, NBC. Poker Face. Peacock's Poker Face.
Yep.
So if you're paying for Poker Face.
Yeah. So anyway, I've been watching. Well, I went through the teams, the 20 teams in the Premier League, and I picked my favorite, which was Newcastle. And I like Newcastle because I like the beer. It's my favorite. It's my favorite beer, Newcastle Brown Ale.
Okay.
So I get all excited. Tiffany's out of town all week, so I get to watch whatever I want.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, I watched stuff she'd be happy I was watching. So I was watching this sports documentary about Newcastle. Not only did they just get completely bought out by Saudi money.
Oh, no.
They just lost their last two games.
No.
Like, by a lot. Last week, they were playing Liverpool. They were up one. Liverpool was down to 10 guys, and they lost 2-1. And then they played Brighton this weekend and lost. Well, they're losing 3-0 right now. So I'm like, huh, maybe it's time to talk some comic books.
Good plan. I'm glad that was your thought process.
Yeah.
I like it.
But yeah, apparently watching your team lose is part of this process that I don't much care for.
Yeah. That is the not fun side of being a sports fan.
I mean, is this what it feels like to like the Dallas Cowboys?
It's what it feels like to like the Oakland right off the top of my head.
Yeah.
The Las Vegas Raiders, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Las Vegas Raiders.
Because I've been a Raiders fan since Madden was their coach back in the 70s, and I've remained loyal despite my many disappointments and losses.
Yeah, I'm just like, you know, oh, we lost again.
Yeah.
This must be what it feels like to live in Dallas.
Yeah, exactly.
See, I'm making football jokes because I can now, because I'm sports guy. I'm Jeff sports guy.
Sports guy. Jeff the sports guy.
I'm the sports guy.
I like it.
Yeah, Tiffany's sleeping through all of this. The only thing she woke up to was me saying Dallas Cowboys, and she woke up and said, yuck, and rolled over. She's got the flu. If anybody's wondering why she's asleep, she's got the flu. She's not feeling well.
Oh, poor thing. That sucks. I got sick this week, and it like hit me like a Mack truck. And then has left almost as quickly, except for the lingering cough that is miserable. So,
Is there still, do you still get like a moment of uh-oh when you get sick now? I mean, I do.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Uh-oh. Am I going to need Paxlovid?
Yeah, I had two friends test positive. Two friends who are very cautious in the world test positive last week. I tested twice and I tested negative both times, so. and it's pretty much gone now. So I'm pretty sure it was not the COVID. Mm-hmm. But it could have been. Who knows at this point?
We just did the COVID test for Tiffany here about an hour or so ago. It came up negative. But that's exactly what you think. It's like, oh God, it's COVID.
Yeah. Oh God, I'm going to die.
Yep.
Or at least be really miserable for a week. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, for me, it's more like, dear God, I can't miss time.
It's like, we're talking about COVID now. It's like, well, COVID's like a bad cold that cold medicine won't touch at this point. And it sucks, but at least it isn't likely. It is less likely to put you in the hospital. Although I don't know about this current strain that's super virulent. I don't know, but we'll see. I haven't heard many deaths yet lately, so I don't know what the death toll is. I'd have to look it up.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't been keeping, I'm not obviously like everybody else in the world, haven't been on top of those numbers like I used to be, but it would really make sense that it evolved to a point that it's not killing its host. That's what viruses do best.
Yep. So I was talking about that with another nurse who was like, no, it's not in a virus's, not that they have a best interest, you know, they're not conscious, but.
Right.
It's not in a virus's best interest to kill its host.
Yeah.
Its whole purpose is to replicate. And if the host dies, then it can't replicate. So, yeah. Yep. It's like those first, the first million people was like, oopsie. Yeah.
Yeah. I just pictured this little virus like, oh, sorry.
Sorry.
That was an accident.
Ah, shit. We're still killing people. Then it was George Carlin who said, this is what's going to take us out. You know, the earth is just going to get rid of us. And he said, the earth knows the thing that worked best was viruses. So he basically predicted us having the COVID, you know, having another pandemic within this century. And, he was just, cause that when he hit the end of his career, he went from this, you know, I'm just going to make fun words up to a really dark, you know, just dark comedian. He's you know, the world's going to end and I'm going to be there. You know, if I'm alive, I want to be there for it and everything. Because he was like, because his opinion was nothing is going to change before I die.
And nothing. He was right.
And of course he was right. Yeah. he looked at the world. And he's like, nothing's going to change before I die. So I might as well talk about that.
Right.
And it was some dark comedy, but yeah, just the, you know, he was like, the earth's just going to shake us off like a dog shaking fleas off. And he does this thing where he moved his back. I was like, oh geez. Yeah. Yeah. Well, on that happy note, anything else good this week?
No.
No.
What's that?
Oh, we're finally getting raises at work.
Oh, good.
Yay. I got my hair done. You can't really tell in this light, but it's silver on the bottom now.
Neat.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
This silver hair thing is kind of fun to me because it's like, well.
I just had to wait.
And then it fell out before it actually turned gray. But my brother, he grew his beard out and it came out white. So my brother, who is the most conservative guy I've ever known, you know, just a down home country boy, went and got his hair done and bleached white, you know, dyed white so that it matched his beard.
Huh.
I was like, I did not expect this level of vanity from you. It's like, well, I was just sick of this salt and pepper stuff. And I'm like, I figure it'll all turn white one day.
Yeah, it's a weird flex to go that direction, but I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. I'm looking for work, so I have to dye my beard so I don't look my age.
Right.
You know, for these fucking Zoom interviews. And so I got the dye. It's just sitting in the bathroom. The only thing keeping me from it is my complete ignorance as to how to do it. The one time I've ever dyed someone's hair, we turned it piss yellow. You remember?
I remember. Yep.
It was my a friend of ours wanted to bleach his hair.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, you know what? I think we got shit at my house. Come on over. And so we did it, and we read the package, and we did all the stuff, and it turns out that the stuff that we used was way old from back when my stepmom used to bleach her hair, which was mm-hmm. which was many, many years before I even met her. And so we did that, and then when it came time to rinse it all out, it was piss yellow. And he's like, "What the fuck?" I'm like, "I gotta get my mom." And so I get my mom, and I'm like, "I've made a terrible mistake. How do we fix this?" And she just walked in and started to laugh and laugh. She's like, "There is nothing you can do, but we'll try." And so she did. But yeah, he ended up with yellow hair there for a few weeks. I think he ended up dyeing it.
Yeah, he wound up dyeing it to like a red or something.
I would have
like
stuck
that.
With the yellow, man. That was fun.
Yeah, I'm like, you look like the Luke Skywalker action figure I had.
Because it was
yellow hair.
It was right before I met you guys that my dad made me get rid of the blue mohawk, and made me get the crew cut.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so at that point, it was just like somebody else with hair color. That'd be cool. And he's like, "Oh my God, it's yellow. What do I do? I don't know. Not have your 15-year-old buddy help you bleach your hair? What do you want from me?
Make better choices moving forward. That's what you do, friend."
And keep in mind, this was pre-internet when you couldn't just YouTube a tutorial.
Right.
Yeah, I had to read directions. Which and
they also had better directions back then than they do. I think they do now.
Yeah, it was more than just a QR code.
Exactly. So, a QR code to a YouTube video on how to do it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Apparently, the only thing I didn't read was the expiration date on the bleach, or the hydrogen peroxide. I can't remember. Something had very badly expired, and that's what happened. So.
Oh, yeah. good times.
I'd have a hard time. It had to have been the coloring, because I can't imagine hydrogen peroxide ever like aging to where it's not effective or something, you know?
it would just lose potency. So you would need
more,
longer or a higher concentrate. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So probably it still bleached his hair, but his hair was dark enough and the potency wasn't high enough that it actually turned it white. It just turned it yellow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'll take that as long as it's not my fault.
When I pull the black out of my hair, that's what it does.
Ah.
It's so ingrained in the roots of the pores of your hair that it just pulls a little bit, and that's all it can help. And then your hair is fried.
Yep.
So it wasn't strong enough to fully bleach his hair.
Okay.
Yeah, my kids have fallen into the dyeing their hair black a lot lately. So, like, hey, if you got it, enjoy it. That's what I say.
What does your bathtub look like?
It's been quite a few shades, although my daughter's gotten very good that she really doesn't leave much of a ring when she's done now. But, and then my son goes to have his friend do it for him because they seem to have the skills. So he goes up to their place and has him do it. I'm like, okay, whatever. And then he brings home these little bottles of conditioner with the color mixed in.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's what he conditions his hair with. And I was like, I had no idea that was a thing.
I didn't either.
My only experience with dyeing my hair was like Jeff, coloring my beard to look younger for an interview. And within a week, it had completely washed out.
Yeah, that's what I'm waiting for.
I was like, it's dye. It shouldn't wash out. And I think my son pointed out to me, if you wash it, it comes out faster. I was like, well, you know, I'm not going to not wash my face.
Yeah.
You can get permanent and semi-permanent dye mm-hmm. as well. So you might have had semi-permanent, which means it washes out quicker.
it's the Just for Men beard dye. And
oh.
I don't think.
Yeah, it's a semi. That's a semi right there. That's what that is.
Yeah, it's definitely a semi.
It's you have to keep using it. It's like a Rogaine color. You just have to do it and do it and do it and do it and do it. Or otherwise it'll wash out. Because I did. So, I dyed my hair a lot. You and I, we've got those pictures of us going up to Timpanogos at one time. I had mm-hmm. tried dyeing it black.
Yes.
And it lasted all of about 15 minutes before it went to some weird Auburn brown, which I didn't hate.
Yeah.
You know, but it was not what I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. This has gone well off the rails.
It's gone all over the place. Once I decided that it wasn't going to stay in, I was like, you know what? I got a makeup kit, a professional makeup kit right over here. I'll just brush in some color and
there you
I
go.
Can make it look real and then wash there it out go. Later. And I don't care at that point. So, yeah, I went and bought some temporary hair coloring that matches my normal brown color. And yeah, I can just brush it in and it looks good. Yeah, it feels weird when you got all that makeup on. It's like putting mascara on your beard, you know. But at the end of it, believe me, I've done mascara on my beard too in the past when I wanted to have a blackened beard. Well, on these happy notes, let's dive into some news.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
Decomposition is happening in Margaritaville this weekend as singer songwriter. What? He's wasting away. Singer songwriter Jimmy Buffett.
so bad.
Writer of the song Margaritaville has died at the age of 76. He passed away peacefully, we are told. So there was no fighting, no gunshots,
mm-hmm.
just apparently sleep, surrounded by his friends, family, music, and dogs. I hope to God they played somebody else's stuff.
Oh, jeez.
No, not because of that, but I mean, it's just like you've been playing this shit every night, you know, three quarters of a year for the last 45 years, and you're on your deathbed, and they're like, here you go, buddy, Here's a little Margaritaville, and you're just like, this fucking song! Put on some Pink Floyd, I'm dying, for Christ's sake. Anyway, Margaritaville, 1977.
Jesus! Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's been a popular song ever since.
And everybody knows it.
Mm-hmm. Well, in my defense, I know it as a different song.
Oh.
Yeah.
So, you know what? Jimmy Buffett seemed like a nice guy.
Yeah.
He did. And we're going to talk about him on the Left Show yesterday. A little bit as how his politics skewed. So if you want to hear that, pop over to leftshow.com and join us for some more of me being inappropriate about somebody dying.
What I found interesting about Buffett was everybody kept tying him to Warren Buffett when Warren Buffett became popular, you know.
Right.
Like, are you related to Warren Buffett? He's like, no, I have no relation. But he started looking into Warren Buffett, and he finally reached out to him and said, how do I grow my money in the way that you've done? Because you seem okay, so how do I grow my money? And, yeah, that was it. He kind of was like, oh, okay, I can do that.
I don't care who you are. Jimmy Buffett reaches out for advice. You give advice, good or bad.
Yeah, exactly.
You do what you can.
Right.
Warren Buffett's over there going, yeah, I'm a billionaire, but fuck, I'm not popular. I'd buy the man a shaker of salt and then move on to giving the advice. There.
Exactly.
There you go.
Another Margaritaville joke. Because I, serious as shit, do not know any of his other songs. Oh, Cheeseburger in Paradise. One of my favorite songs, I got to admit.
Cheeseburger in Paradise.
Cheeseburger in Paradise. Love Cheeseburger in Paradise. That's a great song.
Your parody of, I don't remember if it was your parody or if it was a parody you learned of Margaritaville.
Yeah.
Regarding Dungeons and Dragons. That was fun.
Yeah, I've got that written down somewhere in the storage unit.
I still hear it in my head whenever I hear Margaritaville.
Same. Yep. All right, moving on. Bill Richardson, former governor of New Mexico, hostage negotiator, mm-hmm. and former ambassador for the United States of America, has passed away at the age of 75. He was a congressman, a cabinet secretary, presidential candidate, but everybody called him the governor.
Yep.
I knew Bill Richardson. He came He came through town a few times when I was working for the DNC, and you know, we met him in D.C. when I was out there the time I met Biden. Funny guy, wicked smart, just the nicest guy, you know. It's one of those things where I'm a stickler for how people treat wait staff. You know, mm-hmm. if you're good to people who are powerless against your tantrums, you know, then you're a terrible person. And if you're nice to people, then you're a good person deep right. down, you know, and it's just offsides like that. But Bill Richardson's life, Jesus Christ, this dude did a great job for Bill Richardson or for New Mexico. Was involved in getting Brittany Griner back home, mm-hmm. you know, yep. and that was 15 minutes ago, and the dude's been dying the whole time. Right? He's been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize. I mean, he was just such a fucking wonderful person, you know, that I'm very sorry he's dead, especially at such a young age.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he right. says being closer to that age. Yes. Jerry Conway, Punisher and Jason Todd creator, has revealed yeah. that he is struggling in a fight with pancreatic cancer.
Oh.
Prolific comic creator known for his work at Marvel, DC, and others, has revealed that he recently battled pancreatic cancer. He went on Twitter Thursday to reveal the news, sharing that he was initially diagnosed in October of 2022. He's had some surgery to get rid of the tumor. He's been cancer-free since January, but he still has complications. Including being put into a medically induced coma, you know, because yeah. everything's fine when that happens. I call yeah. it ketamine. But no, I've never done ketamine. I'm gonna one of these days. I don't care where I get it either. Doctor's office. I don't care. Stu, who waits at the bus stop every day. Whatever. A little ketamine. Hey, man, you need some ketamine? Oh, I got to work today, buddy. Stu. Anyway, his tweet read, I'm ready to talk about a bit. And then finally, last October, I was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And I had Whipple surgery to remove the tumor, including my gallbladder, some of my intestines, and rearrange most of my lower body parts. They do that. His penis is on his clavicle.
Yeah, it happens.
It's just a weird thing. Yeah, it's you know, cancer treatments are odd now.
Mm-hmm.
No? No? Just,
yes!
Just throwing that one
I
out there.
Said- Yes.
SAG-AFTRA has given permission for the video game industry, their members in the video game industry, to strike. This is a preemptive move. Like, if the negotiations don't go well, you guys don't have to call home first. Just do what you got to do.
Well, there you go.
Yep. Yep, SAG-AFTRA's board voted unanimously to send out the strike authorization from its members for the video game industry. This means members would vote on whether or not they want to strike or not should negotiations with the video game industry fall through. Notable companies that would be struck include Insomniac, Warner Brothers, Disney, Activision, EA, Epic Games, and Take-Two International. That's the folks that own Rockstar. Mm-hmm. Basically, these folks are looking for better wages, protections against AI, better working conditions, mm-hmm. Such as vocal stress protections for those in the gaming industry. Negotiations with the aforementioned companies will start September 26th. So a chance of a gaming industry strike will start to become more of a possibility by the end of this month.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, I could get a video game strike for my birthday. Wouldn't that be fun?
Lucky!
No, I'm having my own video game crisis right now in the fact that I'm broke all the goddamn time. And Bethesda just kicked Starfield out the door. And I'm getting a lot of mixed reactions on that one. There are some people that are like, it's a little buggy. You know, it's a little repetitive. Oh, it's a grinder. And then you get more articles that are like, this is the uncontested masterpiece from Bethesda, you know, and these are the guys that made Skyrim, which is arguably my favorite game of the last 20 years. It's the one I've played the most. And so, you know, I'm just sitting here having to pay rent when we finish the show and knowing that it's going to be months before I can afford this goddamn game. Goddamn game.
Damn it.
I just want something other than Ted Lasso to make me feel better.
I mean, I can understand that.
Yeah. And then for those of you that like these sort of things, Hasbro's celebrating the Infinity Saga with new Marvel Legends action figures. I ordered some. They will be in Dr. Volt's as soon as they are released, I believe, late November. These are... Look, usually when you get a box of a mixed set of Marvel Legends, you know, there's like one of each cool character and then two of the dipshit characters nobody buys because Hasbro's like, fuck you. And so that's why when you walk into a store with a Marvel Legends section, you look at a lot of dumb fucking Marvel Legends and you're like, who the fuck? Those are the ones people don't ever buy. This set, every single character is cool.
No.
You know? And so, so I got two cases. So those will be in somewhere, we're told, near November. But yeah, you got an Iron Man, you got a Thor, you got a Spider-Man, you got Captain America, you got the Black Widow. Let's see, I said Thor already, you got Bruce Banner. I guess Bruce Banner is about the closest one to being dumb. Because you really want a Hulk. Who the fuck wants a Bruce Banner? You know what I mean?
Well, I kind of want a Bruce Banner, but that's just me.
You do, but that's more your weird fetish for Mark Ruffalo than anything else.
That's really it. I'm not getting a Bruce Banner action figure. I'm getting a Mark Ruffalo action figure. That's really what
you
I'm
really
getting.
You really are. Oh, Ruffalo.
I mean,
Ruffalo.
I've got my Simu Liu action figure here.
There you go.
It's not Shang-Chi. It's Simu Liu because that's his fucking face.
I was really hoping it was a Ken doll.
Oh.
Oh, that would have been fun.
Why have a Ken doll when you can have Shang-Chi?
It's
looking cool.
It's,
yeah.
That's just martial arts Ken.
Yep.
Yeah, it is martial arts Ken.
Here, I'll tell you guys a secret. You guys want to hear a secret? So
yes.
I have a pillow upon which I rest my head when I lay down to sleep each night. And then I have a pillow that I lodge betwixt my knees because my knees are bony and I like that. That helps me sleep. I'm a side sleeper. And then
that also
takes
pressure off your back.
Yeah. And then I have a pillow with which I wrap around an arm, right? To keep me, I don't know why. I need it. If it's not there, I'm really well aware of it. That pillow that I wrap my arm around has been nicknamed Hemsworth.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, there you go. All right, that's it for the news, gang.
Okay, we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we're talking moving pictures.
If you came across someone struggling with hunger, how would you recognize them? Would you notice a 16-year-old boy who got his first job?
Not for extra spending money, but to help feed his little sisters?
Or a mother who's in between jobs
and sometimes goes to bed hungry so her kids can have dinner?
I am the one in eight Americans who struggle with hunger.
I am hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Hey, this is Elena Huffman, Abaddon on Supernatural, and you are listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
There's nothing wrong with your television. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are now controlling the transmission. We control the horizontal and the vertical. We can deluge you with 1,000 channels or expand one single image to crystal clarity and beyond. Please stand by.
So what have you guys been watching on the TVs and movies and moving pictures this last week? Let's start with Pat.
I have been watching the Harley Quinn show.
Yes.
It's so good.
Yes.
I'm in season 3, so her and Ivy are together finally.
Mm-hmm.
And Harley just joined the Bat family. So we'll see how that goes.
I mean, I think it's going to go well.
This has been one hell of a fourth season here.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
I'm caught up. I'm caught up on season four as of yesterday. So I'm like, I can't wait for you to watch it.
Nice. Yeah, I'm getting through it pretty fast. Although I was a little distracted the last time I was watching it, so I've got to rewatch a couple episodes. Yeah, that's mostly what I've been watching. Otherwise, I've been busy painting or prepping for paint.
Fun. That's always fun.
So that's the only thing I got to.
How about you, Jess?
I went out and saw the Barbie movie for a second time in the movie theaters so that I could help push those numbers up. And plus, I just love it so much. I sat down and watched, you guys, I watched The Flash. Now this, JC, didn't you say you liked this movie? You said that. Like, those weren't your words.
No, those were not my words. They were not my words.
They were your words? Jeff likes that movie?
I do. I like it for all the little moments. I do not like it as a film. I like it as a series of vignettes stitched together to give me little moments of happiness. And for the most part, though, it's like someone giving me a compliment while punching me in the nuts. That's that movie. You look nice today. Like that. That's what I'm saying.
So, let's start with the motion sickness that's the opening scenes of that movie. Holy crap.
So bad.
I was so nauseated. It was ridiculous. But I agree. There were lots of little moments. When I could pretend it was a Batman movie, I loved it. When The Flash was on screen, I wanted to stab my eyeballs out.
I really tried
to be fair. I tried to go in it with an open mind. I know that I crap all on the DC movies all the time, and I was trying to give it like a fair fighting chance. And I personally think DC did such a disservice having such a great TV Flash in Grant Gustin, because I love him. He was delightful. And then they cast Ezra Miller into the movies, and they're terrible. And not just Ezra Miller's like personal shenanigans, but oh my God, why are they trying to make all of their characters so dark in their movies and so angsty? Mm-hmm. Why? Why?
Well, why? Zack Snyder. That's why.
Well, they need to knock it off because I don't like it.
Old man Bruce fight in the kitchen.
Oh, yeah.
Brilliant.
Kick ass. That was the Batman movie awesome. Part.
Even everything was Supergirl.
Brilliant.
I know.
Yeah.
George Clooney. Brilliant.
Loved that moment. Loved it. I was like, woo!
See, that was for me. That was what made me go from to I like this movie.
Okay,
George Clooney shows up in the last minute and I'm like, fuck yeah, that's brilliant. I don't care whose idea it was. Give them a raise.
That was fun for me.
That joke was so written for you too, because you've always talked about Clooney being the best bat chin.
Best bat chin.
I was like, oh, I see why Jeff liked this ending so much.
No, the problem is George Clooney's got this thing that he does when he's acting where he tilts his head. Have you ever noticed?
Yeah.
He's a health clown. And so you put him in a bat suit and he can't do that anymore. And suddenly it's like, oh, maybe you can't act. Because he was fine as Bruce Wayne. Anyway, it's not his fault that Schumacher made him pull out a fucking bat charge card.
Yeah, exactly.
That's true. And George Clooney's Batman and Robin movie, although did give me one of the best one-liners ever, which was Chris O'Donnell as Robin standing on the hull of a ship with a bunch of holes. And
he literally said,
holy rusted metal, Batman.
Yeah.
Loved it. Died laughing at that. But so I've watched the Flash movie. That is an experience I have done. I will never get those two-ish hours of my life back, and that's okay. But I never have to watch it again, and I'm perfectly fine to never watch that movie again.
Wasn't that Batman Forever?
What? Oh, yeah, maybe it was Batman
Forever. Yeah, it was Batman Forever with Kilmer, and then Batman and Robin was Clooney.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Clooney was Mr. Freeze. So they didn't. They climbed the tower, the rusted metal tower, in the third movie with Kilmer. When he says, "Holy rusted metal, Batman," and Val Kilmer goes, "What?" And he's like, "There's metal and it's rusted and holy."
I didn't think there was a Robin in Val Kilmer's movie.
Oh yeah, yeah, no, it was.
That was
Robin
when he showed up.
Made his appearance in Batman Forever.
Batgirl showed up in Batman and Robin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Alicia Silverstone's Batgirl, which was. Anyway.
I mean, I believe you. Yeah. Except that Mr. Freeze was Arnold Schwarzenegger in Batman and Robin.
No, he said, yeah, the Clooney one involved Mr. Freeze. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Everybody be cool.
Okay. I missed that part. Yeah. At any rate, moving on, because nobody wants to hear me talk about The Flash anymore. I don't think. If you do want to hear me talk about The Flash, please let us know. I'll do a whole Patreon. I took notes, you guys.
Let's do it.
That's our Patreon today. Joss talks about The Flash.
Joss is going to talk about The Flash, you guys. It's going to be great. And then the other thing that I watched, because I was deathly ill, so I watched a lot of like garbage, you know, diners, drive-ins and dives, whatever. Mm-hmm. But I also did find time once I perked up and was feeling better on Friday. I've caught up on Ahsoka. So I'm sure we'll talk about that in a little bit. Jeff, what did you watch this week?
That's a great question. I thought you were going to go to Pat first. So I have to pull up the email. Pat's full of food.
Already did Pat. Yeah.
Now, I talked first.
I know.
I was first.
I know. I was just telling you where my brain went. That's all. I'm sober. Who knew? So I'll work my way backwards. I've already talked about it. I watched some football. Watched a lot of Premier League. Watched some really good games. The only bad games I watched were the ones with my team in it. So, yay, Newcastle. And the fact that I have to go to a liquor store to get my favorite beer. And I don't go to liquor stores because it's too annoying. I watched on the Apple TV Foundation, based on the novels of Isaac Asimov. Jesus Christ. What's his name? Richard Harris's kid? Jared Harris?
Jared Harris.
I like him. He's good. He's in it. And what's his name? Lee Pace? From the Guardians of the Galaxy. The show about the pie maker, which I can't remember the name of all of a sudden.
Sweeney Todd? Yep.
No. Just fruit pies. Not people pies. What was it? He had the power to bring someone back from the dead, but if he touched him again, they died again. And he was in love with Anna Friel, and Kristen Chenoweth was in it, and she was like the jealous. Pushing Daisies. Anyway, Lee Pace fucking ripped. I mean, like, ripped. Jesus Christ. Every time he runs around wearing these sleeveless jerkins, and you're just like, what the fuck happened to Lee Pace? I might rename my pillow. So, yeah, fuck. So he's in it, and it's the first season is intense. It is intense. And just like the Asimov novels, season two has gone a little odd. It was Isaac Asimov always had really, really good ideas. And then if the longer they went, the weirder they got. This is my humble opinion.
Okay.
Based on a degree in reading. Because, you know, let's do it easy. But no, overall, I mean, the production value is insane. The acting is fucking great. I have just enjoyed the shit out of this show to the point that I didn't realize that the second season wasn't done, and I hit mid-season and ran out of episodes and was just like, oh, I feel like I got...
Oh, no. Mm-hmm.
What was it? Complimented while being punched in the nuts, I believe, is today's theme.
Yeah, that's the theme. Yeah.
What else? Justified, City Primeval finished up. Wonderful ending. I really enjoyed this new chapter of Justified. Tiffany likes old Justified more, when Raylan was running around punching racists, you know. Mm-hmm. And I can certainly see the appeal, but I like it. I like Ole Fantastic. I think he's He's fun to watch on screen. You know, it turns out he's a comedy genius. If you watch the Santa Clarita Diet. And so after seeing that and how fucking funny he was, it's fun to see him back in his tough guy roles that made him famous. Cause you're just like, deep down, you're a teddy bear, buddy. You know,
I love it.
I felt the same way.
Yeah.
I'm so in love with him and I'm just like, wow, he has so much range.
Yeah. Yeah. He's pretty good. And then, Ahsoka. Watch that on the Disney Plus. And, I gotta tell you, Dave Filoni. A 37-minute episode is not fucking acceptable, sir. Not fucking acceptable at all. No matter how cool it is to stand on a spaceship while you're getting shot at. Just because you add 45 seconds of, holy shit, that's what a great fucking idea. 37 minutes is unacceptable.
I'm watching that going, oh, this is a Star Trek thing in Star Wars.
Yeah.
You know, out standing on the ship, you know, in a spacesuit. I mean, Star Wars, how you never saw spacesuits in the movies. Nope. You know, you never saw spacesuits or any of that stuff. You knew they had to have them, but they never used them. They never went outside the ship except in Empire. And then they were docked in that weird asteroid with inside a worm. And apparently they had some atmosphere.
Yeah, because they only had to wear oxygen masks.
Exactly.
Stupid.
So it was so wild to see her do that. And I was like, I just feel like I'm watching Star Trek for a moment here because they keep, I don't know, especially New Trek, they're constantly in their fucking spacesuits outside the ship. Constantly.
That's what they're for.
It's boring and they need some excitement, okay?
You can't wear it in the ship. Like, people make fun of you.
Yeah. What a great way to, and the spacesuits have gotten better. And Ahsoka's was perfect. So yeah, well done on that one.
And from the novels...
Mm-hmm.
They brought in the space whales finally. That's when you fly around space and you turn on your hyperspeed, according to the books, and now it's a screen canon. You are following the map made by tracking the trails of space whales. And I always thought that was a little silly. I'm like, ha, space whales. And then we see space whales in this episode. And I'm just like, you know what? You could have spent 4 or 5 minutes on the space whales and put us into the 40s, Dave Filoni. I mean, you know, I'm saying there was a lot of stuff to explore here to where you didn't have to give me a half an hour episode.
The fact that they basically found the space whales breeding world.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of a big deal to talk about, but yeah.
Right.
And I'm like, I know you don't have a lot of time to get into all the lore of the space whales, but still. We only got like 30 seconds of it right at the end. And I was like, I could have used a little more. I mean, I get it. I understand it. And I didn't read the lore as deeply as other people have, but I'm like, I could use a little more information because I haven't read the lore as deeply as other people have. So, yeah. But no, it was so good. It was such a great episode. Space battles, you know, you got to have a space battle. But to do a twist where she's out on the ship, you know?
Yeah, that was great. Laser beams or whatever they are, they can't weigh anything. There's no reason you can't. It doesn't matter what fucking ship it's got. You should be able to do whatever it is they do with the lightsabers.
Exactly.
Just saying. Anyway,
basically a Jedi as deflector shield. On the back of the ship. And the fucking cannon, to have the whole trope about the rear cannon, and you can't hit anything because you've got to be tied in with the pilot. And she's over there going, use the force. And she's like, that doesn't work that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when she finally was like, okay, turn now. And then she's able to hit things. It's like, yeah, now you can hit things because it's up to the pilot to, it's up to the gunner to tell the pilot what to do, because if the pilot's just flying like normal, you can't hit shit, you know, unless you've learned a different way of shooting. But most of the time, door gunners and tail gunners especially would communicate back to the pilot, okay, give me a 60 degree clock and now, and then they could fire and they could lead the other plane into shooting them down. That was dogfighting 101, especially in a bomber. So yeah, it was just cool to see all that, you know, that made the episode for me. Just all the dogfighting level Because, yeah, as you remember, Lucas based all of the battles on World War II dogfights.
Right.
All the battles were based on a World War II dogfight. So to see them actually doing something in kind of a, if you were on a bomber, which is what was like, it was like flying on the Millennium Falcon. They had the top and bottom guns, and you had to know how to shoot. And because Han knew how Chewie flew so well, he could hit everything, but Luke was struggling, you know, at first to get anything. So, yeah, it was the same kind of deal. It's just you have to get to know your pilot and how well they fight and how well they fire. Yeah. Cool. Yeah, I loved Ahsoka this week.
Yep.
Yeah.
So other than it was too short.
In general. Yeah, too short.
Yeah. You should just keep on talking. It's your turn.
Yeah. Too short and not enough Hera for me. Because, you know, I love her. So, particularly love the actress who is apparently now Mrs. Ewan McGregor.
Yeah.
And he went and knocked her up. And when I think about it, Ewan McGregor is right between our ages, Jeff.
He's
the meat in our sandwich. And he's off marrying her. And I'm like, oh, man.
I was going to marry her.
Damn it. let's see what else I watched this week. I watched Reservation Dogs. Okay, they made the 70s episode make more sense by bringing in the characters now that they're old. And that was fun. I also watched, I mentioned I got caught up on Harley Quinn up to the most recent episode. I just fucking love this show. I fucking love this little series. We did watch first two episodes of Fiona and Cake on Max. What was fun in the first episode of Fiona and Cake is there, if you know Adventure Time, if you've watched it, you know it pretty well. And my daughter watched it endlessly, so I've seen pretty much everything in Adventure Time. She'd go back and rewatch it just because she was bored, you know. And so I've seen just about everything in Adventure Time. So all the little Adventure Time Easter eggs, because Fiona at the beginning is on kind of a normal human world. And so all the characters are there from Adventure Time, but they're different. And then there's this whole thing with Simon in the second episode, which is all after Adventure Time and after the follow-up to Adventure Time, which I've only seen a couple of episodes of that. Because by that point, I got my daughter her own TV, so she just watches in her room instead of me having to watch it everything she watches. So I've only seen a couple of episodes of that, but I recognized older Finn and everything. But yeah, no, it looks like a lot of fun. It looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. I don't know what else to say about it. It looks fun. And then I started doing a rewatch of Lower Decks. Season 3, was it? We just did? Yeah, season 3. We're coming up on season 4. So I've been doing a rewatch of Lower Decks. Now that I got the big TV, I call it my big screen. It's not really a big screen, but I mean, it's bigger than any TV I've ever had. So I was like, well, no, I'm going to watch the Deep Space Nine episode and the, you know, movie episode on the big TV. So I was able to do that.
It was nice you got permission.
Somebody went out shopping. So no permission required.
Oh my god, the house is empty. It's either pornography or Star Trek cartoons.
And I already masturbated, so you know, it's gonna be Star Trek.
Oh, there you go. So you're all good.
Yeah. And then the other thing we've been watching is season 5 of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which includes the best episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Not the greatest episode ever, which was Once More with Feeling, the musical episode, which is in season 6. The best episode of Buffy is not The Silence. The Silence is a close second. The best episode is The Body. And it's not just the best episode of Buffy. To me, it's the best episode ever put on television that deals with death in a realistic way. How people react to death. Because he wrote the dialogue in such a way that they say so much with saying so little. And he manages to hit how everyone reacts to death in a different way. And it's just such a powerful episode. And, you know, just having dealt with a death in my life. It was like a little bit cathartic to go, you know, to have other people grieve, you know, see other people grieve and everything in that way. It's gotta be, to me, I have not seen a better episode of television dealing with death. I don't think I've seen a better movie dealing with death and how people deal with death than Joss Whedon's single little episode in the middle, episode 15 of season 5, called The Body of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And I was like, this is so real. It's frightening how real it is.
When I watched that episode, I was a freaking mess for like 2 days.
Yeah.
It affected me so much.
Yeah. It messes with you. And I'm like, the good news is I'm already messed with from dealing with a death recently. So it was a little more cathartic to watch it. But I remember the first time I watched it, I was like, wow, I have never seen it handled this way and this well and this smartly before. I wish he hadn't copped an attitude later in life, you know? I wish he hadn't copped that attitude that he copped that caused all the problems. But damn, because he was a talented motherfucker when it came to writing some of these things. Jesus. But yeah, that's what I watched. Let's nice. Move on to some moving picture news.
Moving picture news. The Flash. Max's debut was nearly a record low for this DC movie. I admit a little guiltily that I am part of the reason it's not the lowest.
I will also admit that.
Over-imbibed on some medicine that my doctor prescribed to me.
Yes.
Because it's medicine, and that means I'm legit. I'm not a pothead.
Well, so I'm the reason it didn't do well in theaters, but I'm also the reason it wasn't the lowest on HBO, because I'm like, well, I need to see it once.
Yeah.
Just so I know how bad it is. Oh, by the way, going back to Buffy, a few episodes before The Body, there's this episode where they summon this snake being, and you see it form with early 2000, like literally the year 2000 CGI, you know, level CGI. Still better CGI than that fucking baby rescue scene in The Flash. Still better CGI.
Oh my God, that was so bad.
That's a pretty low bar.
You guys, Patreon. Come back
save
to
it for
Patreon.
And save it for
come
Patreon. But yeah.
Yeah.
Save it for Patreon. That Buffy scene was like, oh, I watched it. I was like, wow. And then I was like, you know what? That's still better than that Flash CGI.
Well, according to Samba TV, the Ezra Miller starring DC superhero movie was watched by 1.1 million households in the United States over its first 3 days on Max. That's slightly lower than the 1.2 million U.S. households that tuned in to watch Black Adam over its first 3 days. And way above, this one hurts. Ready?
This one hurts, yeah.
The 260,000 people that watched Shazam! Fury of the Gods. I'm one of those too. What happens is I get a little high. I'm sorry, I get a little medicated. And I'm like, I need something dumb. And I will usually turn on Max. Because it is full of shit that I can watch high and dumb. And
Max is full of dumb, I'll tell you that.
Yep.
Especially now that it's merged with Discovery.
I'll tell you full what though, dumb. if you're on, I think it's Max, if you're on Max and you come across a Hugh Jackman movie called Reminiscence.
Okay.
Take a minute.
Okay.
Or 90. It's a nice little, it follows the time travel trope, but it's not a time travel movie, but it is a psychological thriller, and it was really quite good. I was like, oh, it's a movie, you know, like a movie. It's not a big themed piece of IP, like something from Marvel or Hasbro, you know, or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's an actual, some dude sat down and wrote a movie, and then some folks made a movie, and it's a movie. It was weird. It was super weird. I don't get it, but what are you going to do? All right, let's see. What's up next? The Goonies will be returning to theaters for the Warner Brothers anniversary. They're re-releasing Richard Donner's iconic coming-of-age film in theaters as part of the 100th anniversary celebration. Let's see. Fans of Richard Donner film will have a chance to watch it in Regal. Ooh, cool. And AMC Cinemas for a limited time starting September 1st. And then on September 10th at Cinemark Theaters. So that's fun.
That is way fun. Yep. I'm going to definitely hit that up.
And there are rumors of a Goonies sequel. And Ki-Hui Kwan is like, yes, I'll do it. I'm looking forward to seeing him in Loki, which is later this month, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah.
John Wick director, Chad Stahelski. Stahelski. Fuck it. Chad has teased the upcoming Highlander movie reboot with Henry Cavill, revealing that it will include both familiar characters and elements taken from the 90s television show.
Oh, God. Oh, really?
I don't know. What is Elizabeth Grayson up to these days? She banged Bill Clinton, you know, when she was Miss America.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean.
She was hot.
Is banging Bill Clinton really a thing to brag about? Because a lot of people did that.
Oh, no. I worked for the DNC. I had to bang Bill Clinton to get the job.
It's kind of a thing. You just got to do it.
Now, just hold still and take this while Hillary pegs you.
Yeah. It's funny how paranoid Elizabeth Grayson got after that too. She was like, I have to hide out in Canada or Bill Clinton will murder me if I come back or something.
Nah, you were on Bill Clinton's I'm proud of this one mantle.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No shame here. I tagged Miss America. You know, that was on on his wall, framed in a shadow box.
I was going to say he had a t-shirt made. It's all good.
I'm just saying, you know, if I banged Bill Clinton, I'd wear a t-shirt.
Well, you did.
Well, I will say,
I went to the White House tour and all I got was pegged by Hillary Clinton. That is the new...
That's a t-shirt you need.
That's the new Left Show t-shirt right there. I'm making that right now.
Yep.
I'm making that right now. I love it.
Going back to this article, I will say they say they're pulling elements from the 90s TV show. I'm like, pull the good elements, please. There were a few really good ideas, a few really good elements in the 90s TV show. And if you want this to be a series of movies as opposed to one movie, and then how do you make a sequel? He already got the quickening power. You know, he is the only one now. If you want, you know, that element of the TV show, how you can make that have a little longevity is what I want to see. You know, make the fight for the prize much longer than a single movie, basically. And, you know, and include the Watchers and a few other elements from the original series. But there were some dumb ideas you don't need to have from the original television series.
Bull from Night Court.
That was funny. Oh, my God. First episode. First of all, you see Connor, which was weird. But then it turns out he's being hunted by this guy who is so vain he has to wear a metal mask to cover his face so he doesn't get a scratch on his face when he's sword fighting. But all that was so Richard Mall didn't have to sword fight. But then when they shot the actual sword fight, he loses his mask, of course. And then they slowed everything down and it was the most...
Gorn
level sword fight I've ever seen, yeah.
Yep.
And Adrian Paul is no stranger to using a sword, and he's actually, you know, he got better as the series went on, but it was crazy to watch it. I did enjoy the Highlander series itself, but there were elements that I was like, you know, you went too far, or no, don't do that. Oh fuck, you did that. But the rest of the time, you know, I enjoyed it. I stopped watching after a certain point because I was like, yeah, you've gone too far. So toward the end, I kind of stopped watching. But
I have literally watched every Highlander movie, including the weird one they filmed in the quarry pretending it was the future. And all they had was blue gels for the lights. And that was the one with Adrian Paul. And it was terrible. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just absolutely fucking terrible.
I've watched every Highlander movie. I will say that. I've watched every Highlander movie. I have watched most of the Highlander series. But I can only watch like so much of like The Raven with Elizabeth Grayson.
Yeah.
Just it didn't hook me the way that Highlander did. So, yeah. Like I said, you could do it. You could bring in some of the good stuff. The Watchers, I thought, was a really good idea. And this, by the way, was before we had Buffy the Vampire Slayer. So it worked for me. The idea that there is this group that basically their whole job is documenting the existence of these immortals and everything they've ever done. And they kind of hide in the background and keep an eye on these guys. They know who they are and they just keep an eye on them. And then of course it's not fun unless they get revealed. So they got revealed. And then, you know, that was, they cast a really good actor as Duncan MacLeod's Watcher though. So that helped too.
Yeah, he was good. I actually liked him. I mean, it was a bad show but he was a pretty good actor. He was the blues guy, Joe.
Yeah. Joe, the blues guy. And the point is he had screen presence. So you wanted to watch him and that was right. What was good. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, you could do this. You could make it work with some of the 90s TV stuff in it. Not all of it though. Adam would be fun. The guy who was supposed to be the oldest immortal. That would be fun to see him at least once.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'd have to get a different actor. I don't think he looks the way he did back in the 90s, but yeah, that would be fun.
Was it? Oh, is it still me? I forgot where we were.
Still you. Yeah, we were talking Highlander. Yeah.
We were Highlander. Anyway, the movie's coming along
more
great.
Than one.
Yeah, the movie's coming along great. He's pretty happy about it. Can't wait for the strike to be over so he can make it.
Mm-hmm.
There we go. Yeah, boy, we wandered off on that one. Star Trek Prodigy team reacts to fans flying an aerial banner to save the series. Dan and Kevin Hagelman reacted on X to a fan-sponsored sky banner sent to the Netflix Sunset Boulevard office promoting the words "Save Star Trek Prodigy" from above. Quote, "This is incredible. We owe these Trek fans a pint and our lifetime devotion," said the brothers. Mm-hmm. Blessed to have people like all of you in our stratosphere.
Aww.
I will say, as I have been saying since it premiered, Star Trek Prodigy is a really good Star Trek series. You're going to have to buy it on Blu-ray because they've taken it off of Paramount altogether. But this one fan, they didn't just fly that banner over Netflix. They also flew it over the Hulu offices and I think the Max offices. Or no, the Amazon offices. The Amazon Prime offices. To say, buy this. Yeah, pick up this series.
There.
Let's see. In addition to Netflix, the Prodigy banner was flown past Amazon, Apple, and Hulu.
Oh, yeah. Ooh. Apple, too.
Yep.
Yeah.
Let's see. Ms. Marvel's Iman Vellani was cosplaying at the Fan Expo in Canada. And she dressed as Jubilee, which is fucking adorable.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And super simple, really. What do you think about it? I mean, well, I don't know how hard it is to find a yellow trench coat. I really don't. I don't. But it seems a lot simpler than, say, an Iron Man suit.
True.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's fun. I don't know if you guys saw it or not, but they put out a new trailer for The Marvels. It's basically a little two-minute vignette on the backstory that explains what the fuck is going on. That running hand in hand with reports that the Marvels will be the shortest MCU movie by about 15, almost 20 minutes.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. So it's only going to run, I think it was 97 minutes total. So apparently Dave Fialoni wrote it. Gotcha, Dave! Dave Singh! With your 37-minute Ahsoka episode. Fuck's wrong with you? Only get 6 episodes and one of them's a half an hour. I'm just saying, Jon Favreau ought to take you out back and put you over his knee, you little cowboy hat-wearing weirdo.
Are you kidding? Favreau would be like, oh, you went over time, man. You're only supposed to be 30 minutes.
Barbie has become the highest grossing movie ever for Warner Brothers. Ever.
I added to that.
Well done, Joss.
Yep.
Thanks. I only went twice. I know people who went like, I don't know. I know people who went a lot. 3, 4, 5, 6 times.
Emily from the Nerd Store has gone at least 5 times.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
I've gone none.
We want to go see it. We just, it's like payday comes and payday goes, and we don't have the money to devote to going to a movie. So we hope to see it in the theaters before it's gone from the theaters, because we do want to see it on the big screen.
Well, hopefully you can get there, but it does release digitally like this week, I think.
I think so, yeah.
I'm going to go see Jurassic Park tomorrow.
Mm. Nice.
Because it's in the theaters for the 30th anniversary.
Nice. That's awesome.
I need to see Barbie, but I won't be seeing Barbie because I'm not going to miss Jurassic Park in the theaters. Like, what would be wrong with me if I did that?
That is fair.
That's it. That's all I got. That is it for the news.
All right. We're going to take another break. When we come back, we're talking comics.
My name is Peter Davison. I played the Fifth Doctor, and you're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
Neil Armstrong waited 6 hours and 39 minutes to step onto the surface of the moon. Jackie Robinson waited 20 months to play his first game with the Brooklyn Dodgers. And even DiCaprio had to wait 22 years to win an Oscar. You can wait until your destination. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Kevin Eastman, co-creator of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and you're listening to me on the world's greatest comic book podcast.
Wah, wah, wah!
Let's do some comic book news.
Comic book news it is. Distillery. Brand new group said fuck you to local comic book shops.
Why would they do that? Because,
you know, whatever. And they opened up their own online store. Yeah. Distillery, it's a new publisher.
I think they said more of a fuck you to Amazon than anything, but yeah.
Well, as a guy running a comic book shop, no. No, because... Amazon can absolutely absorb the damage. Me? I can't. Nope. I can't. I still have to buy this shit, and people can get it cheaper online. It's like the fucking McFarlane toys. Those assholes charge me a goddamn mint for those fucking things and then sell them just over cost on their website.
Yeah.
You know? It's like we've been, I don't know. It's fucking Hasbro. You know, selling shit to Target and Walmart so that they can put out $10 toys that they charge me $20 for before they even hit my floor. You know what I'm saying? So right. Distillery, this new publisher with a stupid distribution model, is being stupid and doing stupid things on stupid online stupid. Anyway, yeah, so they did a thing and people are all excited about it. We'll talk about Distillery later.
Okay, cool.
Fuck these guys. They open an online store. Big whoop. I just did that for Travis Romney last week. Yay.
He and I were talking about that. But no, this one with Distillery, it's isn't it digital stuff to start?
Well, I got it in the store this week. So,
because I know Jock's The Devil's Cut was supposed to, was on the cover of the last previews, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
For Distillery. So Distillery made the cover of the last previews, which was interesting.
Yeah, because it's all new and different. It's weird. Mark Millar has been part of a press tour going out there talking about Big Game. Big Game is a crossover he's put together featuring characters from all of his various books, including Kick-Ass, Kingsman, Nemesis, Magic Order, and more, as well as The Chosen One. Campaign's mostly been on his Twitter account, but he also released some comments on a live stream. And basically what he's saying is that you get a couple of handfuls of these legendary writers, you know, the big names, mm-hmm. and you take half of that and you cram it down Marvel's throat and half of it down DC's. Let's be honest, Marvel needs more help, so probably more than half for Marvel. But, you know, and then you have these legends come up with new, basically universe-rebooting storylines that uncomplicate, unclutter, and make comics fun to read again. You've read through this, Johnny. Would you say that's about what he's saying?
Yeah, that's basically what he's saying, yeah.
Yeah, and he's saying that the retailers need the help. He's not wrong, especially with Marvel. Mm-hmm. We need you guys to just calm the fuck down, figure your shit out, and be less goddamn confusing. I'm of the opinion that we ought to go back to the point one system. Mm-hmm. That was wonderful. As a reader, because I wasn't a retailer at the time, but as a retailer, when people say, where do I start? And you go, oh, the point one, right there. There you go, buddy. Pat on the head. Read your book, buddy. You know, I mean, it was simple. Now, fuck, man. It's like, especially in Marvel, because we've talked about Night Terrors and how I'm fine with Night Terrors, and I actually think it was a genius idea the way they did it. But it's like, you look at, like, X-Men titles. And all of a sudden, it's these Alpha and Omega titles that then tie into two or three fucking titles that you have to buy all the titles, like Wolverine and Ghost Rider right now, right? You have to buy mm-hmm. Wolverine, Ghost Rider, Alpha, and Omega, and then they jump from Wolverine to Ghost Rider back to Wolverine, or vice versa, whichever.
And whatever so, it is, yeah.
So you're probably a Wolverine guy. You're not reading Ghost Rider. We all know that they legendarily don't get along, you know, mm-hmm. or you could be a Ghost Rider and you're not reading Wolverine because you're wrong. And just saying, you know, and so you're basically buying shit you wouldn't want to buy, and they think it makes them more money. But all I see are frustrated fucking patrons that are just like, why do I have to keep doing this? And then you get Night Terrors, which is like everything's on hold for 2 months while we kick the story out the door. You buy the main storyline. You can buy these others if you wanna, but you don't have to. And I have seen more people, and again, it's all anecdotal, but I've seen more people buy copies of Night Terrors side quests than anything Marvel's putting out for fucking Fall of X right now. You know? And that's right. that's my guys are all old and white. They're picky fuckers. They really are. So Image was like, whatever. And put out a list, a very confusing mm-hmm. and stupid list, right? Basically saying, well, here's a list with titles, no sales figures, but these are really good books coming out from Image, you know. And then he's like, yeah, take Saga out of that, and you've really got nothing left. And he's not entirely wrong. But you're looking at King Spawn, Gunslinger Spawn, Scorched Spawn Universe. You know, mm-hmm. all the ones I have extras of. Then crossover.
Well, and that's it. They're saying these sold really well. To Image, they sold really well because they were purchased by comic book retailers who thought they could sell them.
Yep.
And they couldn't.
Yeah.
So the point is, they did really well, and they've continued to do really well because every retailer, including yourself, is betting on Image because of the success of Saga.
Yeah. But you're looking at the list.
And Walking Dead.
Yeah, the
and
list didn't have
bet on Image.
It didn't have Saga. It didn't have Manhattan mm-hmm. Project. It didn't have Fatal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's got all of these different books that it was missing. It's like Image tried to make a point and made a shitty point instead. Mm-hmm. And Millar's just basically like, we really, really need to save the comic book industry. And I'm not wrong with him. It's just some of these older legends, when they start writing books again, sometimes they're not great.
Right.
You know, they're retired for a reason sometimes. Sometimes they should be retired. Look at you, Frank Miller. You know, can't you just get a compound in Montana with the rest of the racists and just sit around waiting for Qatar to invade? Well, I mean, whatever it is you're going for, Frank Miller. King and Gross's Animal Pound is reimagining an Orwell story. This is coming out in December from Boom, but Tom King and Peter Gross are joining forces for a reimagining of Orwell's Animal Farm. Animal Pound is set to arrive from Boom and moves the events of Orwell's stories from a farm to an animal shelter. This is going to be dark and sad.
Yes, it is.
Yep. Written by King, illustrated by Cross, colored by Bon Villain. Okay, I got to put a pause in this. I got to put a pin, a little pin.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't my last name be Bond Villain?
I mean, we can start calling you Jeff Bond Villain if you would like.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure this young lady's name is Bon Villain.
Yeah,
Bon Villain. But it's basically spelled Bond Villain.
Yeah.
And that's my new name, Bruce Wayne Bond Villain.
James Tiberius Bruce Wayne Bond Villain.
You expect me to talk?
No,
Mr. Bond Villain, I expect you to ask for cheeseburgers in paradise.
Oh.
The Beat is pleased to offer exclusive looks at full first chapters from manga publishers. Saturday AM's catalog of comics featuring diverse creators and characters. So what you do is you pop over to thecomicbookpodcast.com. And you scroll down there to the comic book news, and you click on this one, which is a year of free comics.
Ooh.
A year of free comics. And so what they'll do is you follow the link in the story. And they're putting out samplers of their works every day for a year.
Oh, wow.
Which
That's
is pretty
awesome.
Fucking cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're looking to get into the manga, that's a good way to do it. In the meantime, that is it for the news.
All right, let's find out what everybody's been reading this week. Let's start with Pat.
I did not get anything read.
But I bet you did a really good job of it.
You did a great job of it, though.
Fair enough.
How about you, Joss? What have you been reading this week?
So I got into Dr. Vault and I went and picked up my stack that was entirely taller than I thought it was going to be. And so I bought a short box and I went, I'm going to buy a short box. I'm going to organize my comics. Now I have a system. I'm sure everybody has a system, right? I have a system.
I have a box
of comics.
No system. None.
Okay, listen, I have a system. I have a box. I have a front and a back of a box. If the comic book is facing the front of the box, I have not yet read it. And if it's facing the back of the box, I have read it. And
this way I can
keep all my collections together but know where I'm at. See, that's a pretty smart system.
Yeah,
it works really well if you keep up with your filing and you don't have other people who mess with your comic book stacks.
Mm-hmm.
The problem was both of those things occurred in my life. So I did post a picture on Instagram of my kitchen table that I extended out with all of my various titles so that I could sort yesterday. It was forever long. I really needed two short boxes because one was not enough for all the loose comics I had floating about. Because I took so long to do all of that organization, I didn't read a ton, but I did figure out that I got behind and had not finished Captain Marvel.
Oh.
And I love Captain Marvel. But life gets hectic, right? So I sat down. I have a thing. My other thing that I do, and maybe other people do this too, I literally, because I read so many comic books, I can't keep track of my storylines very well. And so I always have to reread the previous issue. So like when I get a new Daredevil, I read the previous issue and then I read my new one. so that I remember. It like jogs my brain. And so I ended up reading the entire last part of the Escape from the Brood storyline, which finished up Captain Marvel. So I read issues 43 through 50, all in one sitting, which honestly was such a great way to enjoy those last few issues from Kelly Thompson. I cried, I laughed, I was in awe, I was in shock, I was amazed. I mean, I cannot put into words how great Kelly did with Captain Marvel on this run, and I'm so sad to see her run end. And not because I don't have faith in the next set of writers coming in, but just because it was so good. You know, when you get a series that's so good, and as you're reading it, you could be like, people are going to touchstone this moving forward on this character. And that's what this run was. So yeah, it was lovely and it was delightful. And if you are behind in it, I highly recommend you grab it, catch up on it, finish it out. And then come find me on Twitter and commiserate with me that it's over. So how about you, Jeff? What'd you get read?
Oh, that's a really good question. Let me pull back up my browser because I'm over here working on a t-shirt design. I'm not kidding. That will be live by the end of the weekend.
I
picked up, which sucks too, because I need more t-shirts for this show.
Mm-hmm.
So it's if somebody true. Could really say something witty about this show, I'd appreciate it. I just don't see what comic books and getting pegged by Hillary Clinton have to do with one another. But then again, you know, who am I to shit on your weekend, right? So this right? week, I really didn't have time to read anything, so I just picked up and read quickly through Marvel Age number 1000.
Oh.
This is just a bunch of short stories written by Straczynski, McNiven, Inuki, Stegman, Jason Aaron, Dan Slott, Ramo Rowell, Mark Waid. And it was okay. I mean, it look, I don't, sometimes short stories just fall a little short, you know,
mm-hmm.
I got a hard time with trying to wrap shit up in 22 pages, let alone five. So, right. So what it really comes down to is, yeah, there was some cute stuff in here and it's worth picking up. It's only $10. You know, and I liked it for what it was. It's not something that I get excited about, you know, when one of these comes out, but, sometimes they're good. Sometimes they're bad. This time it was pretty good. You know, like some of the Marvel Voices stuff is usually quite good.
Yes.
You know, at least they pick well there. And this was like that. Mm-hmm. So knowing how much I do hate short story anthologies, I also picked up The Devil's Cut number one by Distillery. This is an introduction to their universe, basically. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, founding creators include Scott Snyder, James Tynion IV, Tula Lote, Mirka Andolfo, Jock, Becky Cloonan, Brian Azzarello, Mark Bernardin, Elsa Chartier, Lee Garbett, Joel Jones, Stephanie Phillips, Ram V, Jamie McKelvey, Junko Mizuno, Jesus Christ. I mean, it's just on and on and on the names go. So they've got muscle behind them. They've got talent on loan. Their Distillery could end up being really good. Much like Aftershock was in their first couple of years before they stopped paying everybody. Mm-hmm. Aftershock put out some amazing fucking material. So I'm waiting to see how that goes. But overall, I'd say if you're just looking for something to read for a quick poop, both of these are worth picking up.
Very nice.
Yeah. But just, I mean, let's remember if you're having digestive issues, I also have trade paperbacks and omnibus of all sorts of titles that you could enjoy. Over there at the Dr. Volts, 2043 East, 3300 South in Salt Lake City, drvolts.com. All right, your turn, sir. What's that?
That's how I got my ex to start reading comics. started putting them in the bathroom.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, on the toilet?
That's a good idea.
It worked.
Nice. Nice.
So speaking of short story anthologies, I got this in the mail yesterday, Sharp Wit and the Company of Women from Extra Pages Press. This is a brand new company. They've been in business for 2 years now. This is their second year. They're doing everything over Kickstarter. So finding this book, you may have to look for the Extra Pages Press booth at your local Comic-Con, because I don't know if you can find it anywhere else. But anyway, this was the concept of this book was Sword Women. Now, one thing you got to know about Extra Pages Press is they're very big on LGBTQI voices and having LGBTQI writers and artists. So you've got this really beautiful book, all with women with swords, kicking ass and taking names.
I like it.
Some of the stories really work. They're really cool. Some don't work at all, at least in my opinion. I think somebody else reading it might get something completely different out of it. I was reading it going, I don't know what the fuck just happened. Moving on to the next story. There are 8 pages each, so you don't get a lot of story for each character. I think, which I think is fine, and yet at the same time, there were a couple of stories I'm like, you know, I could have gone with a 12-pager on this one or more. One story that worked perfectly in 8 pages was called Joan 19, about a girl who at 19 is diagnosed with fibromyalgia. Ugh. And she's dealing with all the constant pain of fibromyalgia. And her mother compares her to Joan of Arc. And so when you see her, she's wearing armor. But it's all in like her, how the, you know, she's trying to put armor on for herself. She's not literally wearing armor, but it was like, she goes through this whole thing kind of, you know, talking about Joan of Arc, comparing herself to Joan of Arc and how she doesn't want to be Joan of Arc. And it's just this really, really cool little 8-pager that I was like, that was good. That's what I want. That was awesome. There were plenty of ones with women just kicking ass, cutting people up with swords, knives, axes, whatever you got. There was one where this band comes out with a female lead singer, and they hear these guys yelling, take off your shirt, take off your top. They're opening for some old, you know, 60s band, and they just start rocking it, and you see basically the singer imagining cutting the head off of these guys who have now become snakes with this axe that is her guitar. And then at the end, the guys are like, more, do another encore, sing more, you know, the same guys. So it was that, you know, they won them over, and yeah, they were like, they're walking out, and the old bastards are coming up. They look like a cross between the Stones and the Walking Dead. And they're like, or not the Walking Dead, the Grateful Dead. And they're like, hey, great show. And meanwhile, they're like, we need to get out of here. They don't want to follow us. They should have paid more attention. So they get out. But yeah, that was a good little short story. Just little short stories like that all the way through. Really well done. I hope they make it available through back channel ways to get it, because it's a really good book to pick up.
How did you get it?
I backed them on Kickstarter.
Okay.
When you become a Kickstarter person, you wind up backing everybody else on Kickstarter. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So I got into that one. I think this one got looped in with 2 others that I was backing. One of them was for my friend Lori, and this one got looped into it as well, as kind of a, you know, this is another one you want to look at. And I was like, ooh, I like the cover. I read about it. I'm like, ooh, I like the premise. They had some sample art. I'm like, ooh, I like the sample art. I'm going to back it. What the hell? It's $20. And I backed it. And yeah, happy I did. It's a good book.
Nice.
Like I said, not every story worked. There were some I was like, I'm glad that was only 8 pages, because I don't know what the fuck I just read for about 5 of them. So I'm going to move on to the next page, the next story. But there were most of the stories I felt were really strong. But today is Tuesday, and it's also the beginning of September, so we are going to give not only our picks of the week, but the beginning of our picks for November.
You only say hello, so you can say goodbye. These 2 words must make your life complete. you pick out the hearts that break to make your ego high. And I was just your pick of the week.
All right, what are you looking forward to this week? Let's start with Pat.
So this coming up week, I do not have a Marvel or a DC, but I do have an indie, just simply because I really love the Resident Evil series. So this is number 4 of the Infinite Darkness branch from the animated series on Netflix, Resident Evil. I have not started this series yet, but it is a series I will be reading. So that would be the one I would want to pick for this coming week.
Cool. And your November pick?
November pick is... I have one. Where'd it go? Spider-Woman.
Spider-Woman?
Oh, yeah.
32 pages of Spider-Woman.
There you go.
It's got Captain Marvel as well. Looks like Viper and Diamondback, so it's got some... I don't know if those are exclusively... Are they exclusively Daredevil bad guys, usually? Or originally?
No.
No.
I don't think so. Not exclusive, at least.
Yeah. So Spider-Woman, just because I really like Spider-Woman. Jessica Drew.
Well, this is kind of a return of Spider-Woman back to form again. So yeah.
Since her pregnancy, or just in general? Yeah.
In general. The pregnancy issue worked well. Well, it sold well at first and then dropped off. So she wound up being just a sub character in Captain Marvel. Mm-hmm. Because Kelly likes her, so Kelly had to put her in. And she's like, oh, she's available? She's going in Captain Marvel. So Kelly put her in Captain Marvel, but now this is a chance to give her a four-issue... Attempt to try to give her a four-issue comeback, see if it works.
I'm excited.
Yep. All right, Joss. I can't hear you.
You did.
That's because I muted myself because I was coughing. Remember I had that nasty cough? I keep muting to cough, and then I forgot to unmute. Dang it. All right. Indie
suddenly we're really on a Zoom call. I know, right? You're on mute.
Hello. Can you hear me now? Sorry. All right. My indie pick this week is coming out of Image Comics, Kill Your Darlings #1. It is a series premiere. You know, I'm a sucker to jump on right at the beginning. 8-year-old Rose loves nothing more than to play pretend in a magical land of her own creation. To her, that world is as real as our own, from her fluffy friends to the terrible evil that lurks at the center of it all. In one night, the line between fantasy and reality will disappear, and ancient hunger will feed again, and Rose will be pulled into a gruesome saga that began centuries before her birth. You guys?
Sounds fun.
I think it sounds great. Doesn't it? Mm-hmm. I think it sounds good. And then just as a second, I found this one. I clicked into it. I decided I was going to throw it on just to mention as a trade paperback. If you have kind of probably like tweens in your life and you're looking to get them into comics, this sounded adorably cute. It's called Cooking with Monsters. It's a trade paperback out of IDW. I clicked on it to find out what it was because when it said cooking with monsters, I couldn't decide if they were like cooking side by side with monsters or if they were serving the monsters, like cooking up and serving monsters. You know, but then as I read the intro and it talks about it, they are warrior chefs and they are going to kill the monsters and then serve them, turn them into, they teach the kids how to fight monsters and turn them into delicious meals.
That's funny.
It says Cooking with Monsters is Naruto with a cast of LGBTQ+ characters. It's Percy Jackson or Harry Potter without a straight white man in the pilot seat. And I thought, you know, we need actually more of those kinds of stories. So I think I might even pick this up and see if I can find a child to gift it to. For my indie pick for this week.
I like that the subtitle is The Beginner's Guide to Culinary Combat. That
right?
Yep.
So cute. So cute. And then I'm going to go with my indie pick. I forgot who it's coming out from. I didn't mark that part down. I'll have to look it back up. Crave.
Image.
Thank you. Oh, it's on the email. I didn't put that in my little notes.
Yep.
So Crave, it's a short one of six. And it's a mysterious app that promises to make your desires come true. It spreads among the students of an elite university who use it as a hookup app. David, a top student, engages in a game of seduction with the unattainable Alexandra. Mm. But as requests to the app escalate and wreak havoc on campus, David and his friend's only chance to stop this spiral is to find out what really lies behind Crave. Ooh. I don't know. Sounded interesting. I liked it. I think I'll throw it into my hold. At least give it a try. I love short series, so this is right up my alley.
So it's nothing to do with the cookies, is what I'm hearing. Crazy.
No. No cookies. Yeah. I don't think. So, mm-hmm. How about you, Jeff? What's your indie pick this week?
That's a really good, really good question that I will answer like this. Dynamite has Karma coming out. It's $19.99. This is Alex. We talked about this when the series came out last year, but she's a photographer for an ad agency, and naughty things happen. Things get naughty, and that's anyway. You know what? Why not embrace it? It's intended for mature audiences. It looks a lot like Sunstone, which I really enjoyed. I like this kind of stuff where we're talking about issues that adults have, and they don't necessarily have to be fucking, you know, dark and terrifying. In addition to that, Dark Horse has a new one coming out called Tear Us Apart. This one's Canadian, a vicious cult dedicated to an ideology of pain. Trains children to become deadly assassins.
Ooh.
Yeah. In the middle of this world of cruelty, two teenagers break the cardinal rule by falling in love. They're going to have to murder their way to happiness. That's what I'm looking for. And then let's see, what else did I pick here? Boom! Berserker Fallen Empire comes out at the beginning of November. This is the next one that Keanu's writing without Matt Kent. First one went okay. I don't really have a problem with it. So, you know, I'm looking forward to that one. Image is finally putting Manifest Destiny into a hardcover. If you haven't read Manifest Destiny, it's basically Lewis and Clark mapping their trail across the United States and having to fight every spooky goddamn urban legend we've ever had all the way to the West Coast. It's fucking wonderful. It is so much fun to read, watching Lewis and Clark, you know, fight Sasquatch and shit.
It's great. So cool.
Yeah, it's such a cool really well done. I liked it a few years ago when it was still coming out. Now they're finally going to put it all in one book. I think that's a great idea. That one is also available there in the first couple weeks of November. So that's my indies. How about you, sir?
My indie picks this week. For this week, we'll be getting Parker Girls number 10, which is closing out the Parker Girls storyline. Final issues, Parker Girls, basically. If you're not reading Terry Moore's works, you're just wrong. That's all there is to it. They're really well written, really well done. One thing that I was able to do a few months ago was what's that charitable giving one? That gives you digital stuff. I can't remember the name of it now.
I know what you're talking about. I just don't remember what their name is.
Yeah. I donated to them. Humble Bundle. That's it.
That's right.
So I donated to Humble Bundle and I got all of Terry Moore's books in digital.
Oh,
so
wow.
I started reading through a lot of them. I'd already read a lot of Terry Moore, but I was reading through some of the ones I hadn't read and I was enjoying it, especially the early Strangers in Paradise. Because I wanted to see how the whole relationship between Francine and Ketchu happened. Parker Girls is sort of a culmination of the whole thing with the whole background of Ketchu, that she wound up working for this agency of women that are used as both a, her name is Katrina Chukansky. And so she started going by the name Kachu, which I think is just adorable. Anyway, this is an organization of women that were used as sort of spies and prostitutes at the same time. But once Parker was no longer running it, it was taken over by one of Parker Girl's top agents, Tambi, who does things differently, you know, is more respectful for the women. And yet they all see themselves as this giant family of women. And when one of them goes down, because some guy like Elon Musk seems to have murdered her, they activate and go after his ass and investigate to find out exactly what happened and why he's to blame. And of course, Kachu finds herself right in the middle of all of it, which is so much fun. But yeah, that's what this story is about for Parker Girls, and really beautifully done. Terry Moore, art and writing and art on it, all himself. And it's just beautiful. So I'm happy to, I can't wait to read the last issue and then find out what he's writing next. And then my other indie pick for this week is Cults number one from Blood Moon Comics. In the future, humanity expanded to the stars. Alien civilizations have been discovered and lithium became an unprecedented energy source for the entire galaxy. Not dilithium, just lithium. As Earth is now the main source of lithium, many deadly factions seek to exploit our sources and enter Earth's first and best line of defense, the Cults. This military squadron has the best trained soldiers paired with the latest weaponry conceived to protect the planet from any threat within and beyond. Just based on the cover alone, it reminded me of an old role-playing game I used to play called Justifiers. So I was like, yeah, I could get into this one a little bit. And then my November indie pick comes from Image Comics. G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero, number 301, written by Larry motherfucking Hama. Yes! Sign me up! This is it! This is the return of... This is the official... I don't care what IDW did with all those G.I. Joe series. This is the official return of G.I. Joe, because Larry Hama was the guy who wrote it over at Marvel. Now he's returning to write it for Skybound. Here at Image, because Skybound owns the rights to G.I. Joe now. Not sure how many crossovers we'll have with Transformers, because they will be crossing over, I'm sure. But yeah, this looks like fun. So first issue will be coming out November 15th. And just because somehow he got a hold of it and got rights to it, they're on November 15th. You can also get, so make sure you're paying attention to the numbering on it. You can also get G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero, number one, which came out way back in 1980.
Oh, wow.
Larry Hama. This was Larry Hama's original book. Everything involving the G.I. Joe line that we came to know from the through the 80s and into the 90s, Larry Hama was one of the guys helping them create all this stuff while he was writing the comic book. So, yeah, Hasbro and Larry Hama completely intertwined on that one. For my mainstream picks from Marvel Comics this week, Scarlet Witch number 8 is coming out. Here's what's nice about Scarlet Witch. Even though it's all set up around a premise that's building up to a larger story, each story seems to be self-contained, which I like that, because it means you can pick it up without having read anything before it. You just read the little recap at the beginning, you'll kind of know what's going on, and then you don't have to worry about it. They've only done a couple of two-parters. Most of them have been one part only. And this one, she is basically Loki's mountain giant cousin, comes through the last door, desperate to secure the rights to rule his people. The Scarlet Witch agrees to confront the King of Jotunheim, but of course she's got to, that would be Loki. So it looks like maybe Wanda and Loki are going to hook up in this issue.
Nice.
Which, as an old school fan of Marvel, it's weird to me. But then I remember, oh yeah, Loki got retconned into somebody young and sexy. So that works. Yeah. Yeah, no, you could anybody could pick up Scarlet Witch at any point. The basic idea is she set up a shop in New Jersey, a store in New Jersey that has something called The Last Door. And it's basically when you have nowhere else to turn, this door appears. You go through this door and you're in Wanda's shop, and then she'll go help you. That's the whole premise.
Nice.
And they pretty much self-contain the stories. So, and then what's her name from Thor? Kat Dennings' character from Thor. This is where she makes her comic book appearance, is in this Scarlet Witch series. And she's basically helping Wanda run the shop. Because she had a last door thing. Wanda was her last door as well, but she wouldn't tell her what the problem was until later. So, yeah. And then from DC Comics, Kelly Thompson, Birds of Prey number one, with Leonardo Romero. And yeah, okay, I'm in. It's Kelly Thompson. It's Harley Quinn and Black Canary. I'm in. Let me see what you got. And as Kelly has said, it's not necessarily always going to be this team of women that they'll rotate through them. So, but yeah, I'm like, well, I got Black Canary, who's always been one of my favorite characters. Harley Quinn, who has become one of my favorite characters. Batgirl, Cassandra Cain Batgirl, not Barbara Gordon Batgirl, who has become one of my favorite characters. Big Barda, who's, thanks to all the stuff with Mr. Miracle, became one of my favorite characters. And then you got this character from, the Wildcats thing that I don't really know, but I'm interested, see how Kelly handles her. So she's hitting me. She's giving me some greatest hits already, and then giving me a new character. I can find out how she writes her, and then we'll see where it goes. But all ladies, all fighting the good fight. Basically Black Canary's putting together Birds of Prey teams when she needs a strike team to fight them. And you know Harley's just going to keep showing up because it's Harley. So.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And then my November pick from Marvel, Deadpool 7 Slaughters. This one, everybody's getting involved in this one. This is a one-shot, 80-page one-shot. Welcome to a week in the life of Wade Wilson, the best mercenary Marvel's ever had. Just ask him. From facing off with the rival killers to top secret assassinations, Deadpool has a lot of work to do in his blood-soaked oversized issue full of fan favorite creators past and present. So you get Cullen Bunn, you get Cody Ziegler, you get Guggenheim, you get Justina Ireland, who's most recently working on him, Gail Simone as writers, but also Rob Liefeld, which, well, he created him.
Is it writing? So,
yeah,
is it
Rob Liefeld will not draw his feet. Yeah, Rob Liefeld.
Deadpool has no feet anymore.
Sorry, Deadpool has no feet in the Rob Liefeld story, yeah. And local boy done good, Philip Sevi, will also be drawing one of the stories in this Deadpool 7 Slaughters.
Nice.
Special one shot. So good one if you like the Deadpool and you're curious about how he's been handled over the years. This would be a good one to pick up because I'm sure the Liefeld one will feel very 90s and the others will kind of move forward. Maybe you'll see Hydra Bob in Guggenheim's
there you go.
Story. Yeah, so we'll see. We'll see what happens. Gail Simone writing him, though? Fuck yeah. Let's do it.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. And if it's Gail Simone, and if this falls in line, if it's Gail Simone and Phil Sevi working on it together, on a story together, that's just a match made in paradise right there. So Greg Capullo did the cover. Yeah, worth reading. How about you, Jeff? What are your mainstream pickers?
Mainstream picks. You ask a good question. I'm going to go with, and I don't know why, because I don't read Spidey very often, but Spider-Man's Ooh. Bad Connection. For no other reason okay. than I like the fucking cover. It's goofy. It's the second novel in a series. Yeah, novel. Chronicling mm-hmm. teenager Peter Parker's adventures as Spider-Man. So this is early in his career. And the cover says, "You're holding a new spectacular adventure," written by Peter Chibber. It's called Spider-Man's Bad Connection, current status wrecked. The reason I'm interested in this is weird, but basically Jim Butcher wrote the best goddamn Spider-Man novel I've ever read in my life. And I want to give Preeti Chibber a shot.
Mm-hmm. Fair.
Anybody else read Jim Butcher's Spider-Man novel?
I have not. I need to.
I know I need to.
Yeah.
Because I love his Dresden Files so much.
Oh, fuck yeah. No, I think... have you read them, Joss, the Dresden Files?
I have not. Well, I've read some of the Dresden Files, but I don't remember that one, so...
No, it's because it was a Spider-Man. It was Spider-Man. Yeah. It was a Spider-Man book.
I know, that's what I'm saying. I don't remember that he wrote that one. And then, I will now find it.
Very excited. Very super excited. Dumb excited, because I am a target demographic, and when I am a target demographic, something epic's coming down the pike, and that is the Superman 78 Batman 89 box set that looks like VHS tapes.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it is brilliant. It's only $50, he says, knowing he can't afford it. Doesn't matter. $50 is not bad, man.
No.
Not for this
awesome
set. No, it looks great. And so I am absolutely looking forward to that. Let's see. DC for November was DC Power is being put into an omnibus. That one seems nice. You know, I've enjoyed those so far.
Mm-hmm.
Then it looks like, let me double check here, but Secret Wars Battle World, taking two bad stories and squishing them together to make a third story.
I was just going to say, wait, do we have to?
The reason I'm excited for this, honestly, is I want a repeat visit to the Venom vending machine. And if I don't get it, I'm going to fucking riot.
Yeah, because this one, you know, Secret Wars Battle World was supposed to be the world that Dr. Doom created in the second Secret Wars series, you know, from the mid-2000s. But this one, they're actually going back to the 80s Secret Wars. So, yeah, I want to see the Venom vending machine myself.
Which is funny. Very funny. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's all it for me. Jocelyn, I believe that you are next.
I am next this week. My mainstream picks both come from Marvel. I know that comes as a shock and awe and surprise to everybody. Because I just finished reading this in singles, they are releasing Captain Marvel Volume 10, Revenge of the Brood Part 2. This collects numbers 47 through 50 in that most recent Captain Marvel run from Kelly Thompson. If you have not been reading that series, you really missed out over the last 2 years. But this is a great way to collect those last few issues that are so fantastic. And then my other pick this week that's dropping from Marvel is a Daredevil title. Don't be shocked. It's a trade paperback, though. It's the Guardian Devil Gallery edition. So this is collecting the Kevin Smith run numbers 1 through 8 and number 1/2 and 1/2. I don't know what that second part is. But yeah, this is the storyline that Kevin Smith wrote. There's speculation that this is what they're going to base the Disney Plus series on. It was a great run. I know I have this all in singles somewhere, but that keyword right now in my life is somewhere. I don't know where they are. Running about $50 on this one. I may not pick it up this week, but I may throw it onto a Christmas list. And, you know, Jeff, my mom works at that thrift store just across the street from Volts. So
yeah,
when I send her over to you, like, start putting things aside for my mom's Christmas shopping for me, would you? Can I open a separate hold for my mom for me to put things in for Christmas?
No, your mom is not allowed to buy stuff at my store. She works across the street and never visits, and yet when she shows up with you, she wants a hug. Are you shitting me?
Yeah.
I'm right there every day, and she doesn't ever visit.
I will let her know of your disappointment.
I have snacks. I'll let her know. She could come over for snacks.
I'll let her know. Let her know to come bring you a snack when she's done with her volunteer shift.
Now,
no,
we'll,
she can get snacks from Jeff.
I'm a snack.
You are a snack. That is bad. True. I like it.
No, we can open a hold for her just to remind me next time you're in.
I'm kidding.
I'm not. We're opening a hold for her. Give me your phone number so I can call her when she doesn't pick her shit up. Hey, it's Jeff over at Volts. I got this. I got this drawer full of stuff over here we set aside for you, and you work across the street and you can't make it.
Oh my God, I love this.
Oh, heaven's sakes, you guys. All right, and then my pick of the future. I want everybody to buckle up for this. Are you ready?
All right.
Are you ready?
Zipped up.
Okay. It's a Daredevil title. I know. What? I know. I know. What? It's shocking. I figured I'd make it my first November pick, though. This mm-hmm. one, though, you guys, if you guys are, you're not reading Daredevil because you don't listen to me, this is a short series. This is a 1 of 4. Daredevil Black Armor. They're just, it's D.G. Chichester? Is that how you say that?
Chichester. Chichester?
Yeah, whatever.
It's Chichester.
He's going to spin an all-new Daredevil story set during his landmark run with the character. So it's not going to be like a... It's not going to run into the Daredevil that it will be current at that point, but it sounds like it'll be a mm-hmm. great little mini-series to pick up and reminisce and love and, I don't know, adore. There you go. That's my picks.
Awesome.
Pat, any other picks from you, friend?
No.
No? All right. Fair enough. Fair enough.
Okay. Well, I think that's it for us this week. I will remind everybody to join us over on Patreon at patreon.com/dfinmedia. Join us, become a part of the Patreon squad. And this week, you get to hear Joss wax poetic about The Flash.
Oh my God, you guys, this is going to be fantastic.
She's pulling out her notes here. So we're going to spend about, 10, 20 minutes ripping on The Flash. Meanwhile, I will say, as I always do until Wanda makes out with Loki, make mine Marvel.
For Hell's Kitchen.
For Stan.
There's coffee in that nebula.
For Asgard.